Welcome back to the Hockey House Pod, episode 133, presented by OptumX Sports. I'm your host, Mackenzie Murphy, as we bring you the latest news from the ACHA and AAU college hockey off seasons. We've been very busy lately. We got plenty of catching up to do. Pumped to have Herm, Collins, myself all together on the same call, which has been, you know, something we haven't had in a while here. Collins and I did the Nationals recap episode for 132 with the guys from South Carolina. We're joined this week by David Herman, who has been at the center of the hockey universe for the past couple weeks in Utica, New York. Looks like it was a phenomenal tournament for the women's IIHF World Championships.
Broke the attendance record at the Adirondack Bank Center and then broke the record again, not even 48 hours later. It was a whirlwind of not just 2 weeks of games, but a month of planning, preparation, and entire team effort. I am so beyond privileged to have worked an event of that magnitude, that importance, for the entire world to have seen how good women's hockey is at that level. Having the opportunity to photograph athletes of that caliber, so unreal. To have it happen in our backyard, 3 minutes from where I live, so sick.
If you're tuning into this and you're like, why haven't the Hockey House guys put out a podcast in 3 weeks? Herm legitimately went from a week in St. Louis to what? Being back in Utica for a week before you guys had to turn around and start prepping for the World Championships?
Barely. Not even. The entire last month has been a blur. Pretty much. It's felt like 3 years condensed into an entire month. It feels like one of those weird pandemic months where you blinked and you were like, oh my God, this is taking so long. And you're like, wow, this has only been a month? You're kidding me.
You were a little overwhelmed going into this, right? Because it's our vacations are also work, because we take vacations from our work to go and do more work. You had a great time in St. Louis. We didn't even really get your Nationals recap thoughts. Is there anything that we missed maybe in the Nationals recap episode that you want to make sure we touched on? Not to throw you under the spotlight here, but is there a memory that stands out from maybe those final days in St. Louis that feels like 3 years ago, right?
Feels like forever ago. You're gonna have to jog my memory on this one, at least. The tornado warning was surreal. Getting to sit under the bleachers in the main rink at Centene and have a little golden, what was it, a golden retriever dog like prancing around. Great for vibes. Morale was at an all-time high as we were dealing with nature, basically. We kind of talked about it, how much the Adrian guys welcomed us into their family. I don't even know if I've told you guys this yet, but we got a care package from the Adrian College, I guess, family, from the men's and women's team. And I will be distributing some of those little gifts to you guys. I'll have my dad send a whole photo of the package your guys' way. There's some very, very cool things that they sent us. So I have to give a huge, huge thank you to everyone at Adrian College for taking great care of us.
Oh, that is unbelievable. We love getting care packages. I know I call it Hockey House HQ, but it's basically wherever our laptops are and give us a chance to sit down and record this thing. Also with us is Aiden Collins, who, you know, you're hitting the books right now, but you don't have much time left to hit the books. Graduation around the corner. How are things at Nova?
Dude, it's been busy as all hell. It's like right now we're in the full swing of things with the senior projects. I got three of them. It's been insane. I'm working on my capstone project for advertising, where we're developing a campaign, branding, PR strategy, and launch strategy for an expansion NHL team in Houston, which we decided to call the Houston. So, and it's just been so much research with that. For my other senior projects, I am working on two short films. So I've been editing all day for one of them for my social media marketing class. We have our big agency pitch coming up. We are officially 1 month away from commencement. 30 days from now, I'll be no longer a Villanova, or I will be a Villanova, but no longer paying money.
Sorry, I'm actively recruiting Syracuse hockey alumni to play in a men's league tournament in a couple of weeks. So I'm going back and forth. I'm being GM and podcast host right now. Honestly, it's so cool hearing how busy you guys have been, because I'm just like, man, like I'm busy. Like I wish I could be putting more hours into this thing as well. You know, I know Herm calls, you know, UNLV America's team. And, you know, every year there's a new America's team. Just want everyone listening to know that America's new team is the Kennett High School JV boys lacrosse team, because we are off to a hot 2-1 start. got our second dub of the year tonight at Plymouth, a 10-5 victory. Boys are rolling. Honestly, I was telling the varsity coach, I was like, if the varsity team had if they could just bottle up the energy that the JV boys bring, like the varsity team would be 2-1 too. So it's been so much fun. It is a completely different perspective. I had the joy of coaching U6 and U8 this winter, and you know, that's twice a week for an hour. And then maybe a game or two on the weekends, where high school lacrosse, we're there 2 hours every day. I was joking that we were going to get to record a little earlier tonight, and then, you know, forgot that, you know, a road game, you got to stop at McDonald's and you got to have 40 kids get off the bus and get McDonald's. And that is a whole process. So I used to be on the other end of that and wishing that we would stop on the way home from games. And now that I'm the adult on the bus, I'm like, I just want to get home. I just want to get home and record the show with the boys. So that has been a phenomenal time. This past weekend, we had the President's Cup, which is the big men's league tournament here in Conway at the Ham Arena. Frechette Tire on the hot seat because we went 3-0 in pool play. We were in the driver's seat. We were the clear favorite. We blew everybody out. I think it was a 6-1, 9-1, and 6-2 victories in pool play. And we lost 3-2 in the semifinals on Sunday morning to a team full of like kids fresh out of juniors and playing college. So that one stunk, especially because, you know, I feel like I've adjusted to the men's league game pretty well at this point. And the team that we played struggled early on in the tournament because they were kind of run and gun and, you know, playing individually, and it was a stinger. And so we lost that one. But Merlino Steakhouse, we tied up the series, the championship series, last night. So I'm pretty pumped about that. Game three will be next week. And then I'm pretty sure they're going to start taking the ice out as soon as we get off the ice. So it's been fun. It's a fun time of year. Love the tournaments. Like I said, I'm recruiting a couple Syracuse guys while we're on the call here, but it's been so great. Herm, you mentioned too, getting care packages, a care package that we got the other day from John Kelly from Miami, which is fitting that we have the Indiana guys on because we talk about that rivalry that's now brewing with Indiana and Miami. But JT Kelly's dad is the team photographer. John Kelly sent us some merch. He sent us the Miami versus Everybody t-shirts that went viral, and then he recreated the Waffle House logo as Miami hockey, and he put them on a shirt, and he sent each of us a shirt too. So those are awesome. Maybe if Herm loses a bet, we'll keep one of these t-shirts around and he can wear it for something, but we'll get him to wear it at some point. The gifts are awesome. And we've got Herm, you were in possession of some UNC merch for us, correct? Like, we still have that going. Like, our closets are getting pretty full at this point.
That is like probably four steps behind me right now. I just have to shift that out.
Timmy K worked some magic while we were down in North Carolina and swindled the boys some UNC merch. So Tim didn't get a Waffle House t-shirt, but Collins, you got one of those coming your way. It's been great. But Collins, we got to talk because I think we're not an NHL podcast, but we all have favorite NHL teams. And that had to have been one of the wildest nights in your NHL fandom last night, with the Washington Capitals winning on an empty net goal in a tie game, ACHA style, to clinch a spot in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, dude, I was literally just thinking about that when they pulled the goalie with 3 minutes left. Of course, my Wi-Fi was down. Hulu and my cell reception stayed strong. I was like, I'd seen this movie before. I knew it was going to happen. Who else but TJ Oshie scored the empty netter? So wild night of hockey in general. It really felt like, I could say, it feels like the final day of pool play at the AAU National Tournament. Or I could say it's like the final day of the Premier League. It was just absolute chaos. Nobody knew what was happening. Torts pulls the goalie, even though they're effectively eliminated. You know, one shot seals the fate of three teams. It was just extremely poetic.
I was rooting for the Red Wings in all of this chaos. I just think, like, we talked about it before, right? We made the comparison between Detroit being kind of like Illinois is, right? Like, the league is better when those teams are good. And to see the Lucas Raymond goal late in the game that ties it, they end up beating Montreal in overtime to keep the season alive. I mean, Detroit was rocking the other night. That was so cool to see. So I feel like emotionally, I was a little bit invested in them in Montreal, but just kind of a tough way to go out. Watching them skate off after beating Montreal in the shootout gave me the same vibes as watching Arkansas skate off the ice after tying Lawrence Tech at Nationals. It's like, you know, like, sometimes it's just out of their way. But I was talking to friend of the podcast Shane Rombach, and he said that's what you get for losing to the Coyotes twice. So hockey fans in Detroit will have to wait another year for playoff hockey, but we should have some exciting matchups in the first round. And as always, when we break down the Stanley Cup playoffs, we will make ACHA and AAU college hockey comparison.
Speaking of the Coyotes, how about that news? I feel like this would be a prime opportunity for BYU hockey to make a comeback here.
I'm looking at the Coyotes moving from a different perspective because I don't know if you guys saw, there was a tweet put out that I guess there's a clause in their contract with Mullet Arena that if the Coyotes move, the Tucson Roadrunners would move from Tucson to Tempe because the ownership is the same. I'm curious if the Roadrunners move to Mullet, are we going to get more packed barns for U of A? Because I think they only have one more season in that rink before they move into theirs. So that could be some ACHA news related to the whole Coyotes situation. I think there's a couple of hoops they would have to jump through for that to happen, but I think there's some clause in the contract where they would play a certain amount of games at Mullet Arena, so that could be something to keep an eye on. I think Utah getting an NHL team is going to be great. There are so many ACHA teams out in Utah. We highlighted a couple of the Arizona teams today, but I mean, it's a bummer with the Coyotes moving, because I look at these ACHA teams that are in Arizona and it's like, man, like without the Coyotes, would these, like, would GCU have a hockey team without the Coyotes? U of A had a team long before the Coyotes came to town, but certainly it has kind of polarized the state. You look at Northern Arizona too. They had hockey before the Coyotes got there, and maybe these college teams paved the way for the NHL to come to town someday. But a crazy situation that we're recording this while the Coyotes are basically playing their final game in this version of the franchise's history. I know there's talk about the franchise going on pause. They might be like, when we see ACHA teams take a break or they get suspended for a year and then they come back. Like, I don't know, is that what's going to happen with the Coyotes? But it'll certainly be an interesting situation. Herm, we haven't even talked since the eclipse happened. Did you get to catch any of that in Utica, or were you behind the lens?
I actually had the opportunity to go outside, and the whole staff got to take a pause away from the game that was actually going on at the time. We all just kind of migrated outside. We had a good visibility for a majority of it, and then clouds came in during the actual moment itself, and we kind of shrugged our shoulders, and we were like, all right, we're good. And then we went inside. We had a good time while it lasted, and then everyone kind of threw their eclipse glasses in their desks.
I forgot to mention, with the NHL expansion talk, and there's talks of Atlanta, you know, heating up right now. And it was cool that Anson Carter had a quote basically saying that, you know, what can they do this time around with Atlanta? If Atlanta were to get a team, how could it be more successful the last? And it was interesting seeing him quote like, hey, we want to get involved with the college teams in the area. And he kind of referenced there being a number of popular college teams, most of them being AAU and coming from College Hockey South. But in that Atlanta region, you know, you got Kennesaw State is right there, Georgia Tech, Georgia, they're getting a new rink, obviously. So that was pretty cool to see, and another spotlight shined on club hockey. Herm, we got to talk about this April Fool's prank, because that happened the day that we launched our last episode, and probably one of the coolest moments in Hockey House history. But just fired off a text to the group chat the night before April Fool's. Hey, does anyone have any ideas for something that we can do on April Fool's? And Herm said we should do Hawaii or Alaska getting a team. And when Herm said this, a light bulb instantly went off in my head. I knew exactly what he was talking about, and I got to work on a graphic. Herm, comes to find out, you didn't mean the actual University of Hawaii, did you?
No, I just thought you were going to, like, make up a school in Hawaii, you know? I didn't know you were going to go with the actual school itself. Thought you maybe were going to get, like, an AI-generated logo, something like that. Full transparent April Fool's prank or something like that. Not something that would, like, genuinely fool people into believing this was real news.
Trying to tiptoe the line, right? Because in my head, I'm like, this is like the perfect April Fool's Day prank, right? Like, people are going to do a double take. If they think it is real, the moment they find out it's not real, they're going to think, oh, how did I not know this was a prank? Instantly, we had Grinnelli tweet, like, happy Monday, the University of Hawaii is adding men's ice hockey. And I was like, oh boy, did Grinnelli see this? I was like, there was a couple thoughts going through my mind. I was like, did Grinnelli see this and then tweet about it? Did Grinnelli have the same idea as us for April Fools? And then when I quote tweeted his tweet saying, like, something like, huge if true, he sent us a DM, like, with the crying laughing emoji, because he had fallen for the trick as well. But I always say, when you're in the club hockey business, if your April Fool's Day prank ends up on the desk of an athletic director, you're making some noise. Our post ended up on the desk of an athletic director. The University of Hawaii athletic director, Craig Angelos, had some fun with us on Twitter. He retweeted it with a mock-up of the Adidas jerseys with hashtag Ice Bows, which I think is the coolest nickname for a hockey team. And so I think we've come to an agreement that this podcast's favorite team is the University of Hawaii now. Undisputed, the favorite. We are all hashtag Ice Bows fans now.
We're all still very much attached to our alma maters here. So I guess it's nice to have a team that can unite us and we can put aside our differences, even though it's really just Herm in one category fighting a bunch of other teams. And then it's just Murph and I back and forth with Villanova and Syracuse.
Herm, I'm curious, there was a couple of different mock-ups going around of what the jerseys would look like. Did you have a favorite? Because the Rainbow Warriors is a great nickname. It would be a great addition to college hockey if we could get them at some point. I personally was a big fan of the retro rainbow look and maybe less a fan of the modern, you know, logo, but all great jerseys. They'd be awesome. And we were talking too, like, imagine if we could sell one of these things, like they'd go flying off the shelves. It would be the number one Darty jersey in club hockey.
Forget just having a home and away jerseys. Just give them the Oregon approach and just give them all of the jerseys. Let them have like 15 every single game they go to. They wear something different. I'm not playing favorites with the concepts. I love them all.
Love it. Love it. We've done enough catching up. I think it's time that we turn it over to our interview for this week. We have a great one. Ethan DiLorenzo of the Indiana Hoosiers is joining the show. Like we mentioned, there's been a lot of ACHAM2 talk. Herm was talking tornadoes, golden retrievers. We hit all the high notes with D-Lo. And of course, this one is brought to you by Optimex Sports. Optimex Sports provides teams the opportunity to build and manage their own website. And the best part is these guys know club hockey. So be sure to check them out using the link in our bio. And if you're interested in signing up, be sure to use our referral link at optimexsports.com/signup/hockeyhousepod. Once again, that is optimexsports.com/signup/hockeyhousepod. And be sure to check out our website. We're going to be adding some blogs in the off season here and getting all of our content up on our website. You can find us at hockeyhousepod.com. And as always, that one is brought to you by Optimex Sports, of course. Now over to our interview with Ethan DiLorenzo. We are pleased to be joined by the man who scored the overtime winner in the 2024 ACHA M2 National Championship game, the TSCHL MVP from the Indiana Hoosiers, number 11, Ethan DiLorenzo. D-Lo, it is a pleasure to welcome you to the Hockey House podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me out. I'm excited.
We get a lot of hate for our lack of Hoosier coverage, so we're going to try to make up for that this week.
Sounds good to me.
Are the rumors true about members of the IU hockey team having burner accounts in the Hockey House Pod comment section? Can you confirm or deny those?
I can neither confirm or deny. Heard the same rumors, but I've never seen someone comment on it. Wouldn't surprise me. I can't confirm.
A little integrity there, backing up your teammates there, but we appreciate that, and we appreciate you joining us. Like, walk us through, like, what have the last couple of weeks been like? I mean, you guys have had such a crazy run the last 3 years going to nationals. What is the season like as it dies down? I imagine Bloomington is pretty good this time of year. You know, hockey season ends, it starts to get warmer weather, everyone's hanging out outside. What's it been like?
Yeah, I mean, we've just been celebrating pretty much for the past 3 weeks and it hasn't stopped. We always bring the trophy around and we're still getting recognized by the school, which is awesome, by our club sports federation. And we bring the trophy all over. We got to go to a banquet and everything, and they acknowledged us, which was really cool. We're just really like thankful that we're starting to get recognition from the school, because prior to me coming here, it didn't happen a lot. It's just really awesome and celebrating still. And I still think we're riding the high of the national championship win.
What's like the big event at IU in the spring? Is there like a big like spring thing going on?
Little 500. It's this week, actually. And today is our off day as a, you know, as a school. We're not allowed to have parties. So Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
But walk us through the Little 500, right? Because this is a big deal with the fraternities getting involved, right?
It's majority fraternities, but there are also teams that can just be formed, like sort of like our club team, and they compete. We do like a qualifying race. So I believe it's 200 laps or something around a track. And it's just a bike team that just rotates kind of, and it's awesome. I mean, it's so long, but it's great to be there and see it. Yeah, they just compete and they train all year. my fraternity has been training all year for it. So it's a massive commitment and they're excited to get going on Saturday.
I can just picture it now, like years down the road, once IU has this 10,000 seat arena on campus for hockey and they're playing the Big Ten, like there's just gonna be a line of stationary bikes in the locker room getting the boys ready for the spring.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Growing up playing hockey in the Midwest, looking, you know, we were joking beforehand, a bunch of your high school teammates were sending us messages on stuff to ask you about too. Like, did you kind of know you were gonna play high school hockey growing up? Where'd you grow up? Kind of what led you down that path?
I was born in New Jersey, actually. And then I started skating around 6 and I just fell in love with it right around there. Like the second I put my skates on, I just walked right to the rink like nothing even happened. And it was kind of just natural. And then I started playing hockey like a year later, if that. I didn't even play on a team actually in New Jersey because I moved to Philadelphia. So I played in Philadelphia for a few years and I was playing until like peewees. And then I moved to Chicago suburbs and have been playing ever since. And I just knew that I was going to play as long as I could. And obviously the dream was to make the NHL back when I was much younger, but I just wanted to continue playing. And so ever since I found out about, you can just keep playing even through college, like even if you're not playing at the Division I level or junior or NHL or anything like that, there's still a way to play. And once I started playing, I'd play as long as I can. So high school was definitely a yes for me forever.
Now, walk us through high school hockey in the Chicago suburbs. Is that a big deal? Because I think now there's a little more talk. There's a lot of AAA, there's high school hockey. Like, compared to maybe other hockey states in the U.S., what does high school hockey in Illinois look like?
Yeah, so it's actually like pretty different from what I hear from other states out east. Because out east, I think they encourage you playing for your high school and AAA or prep, whatever that may be. But in Chicago and Illinois, if you're playing AAA, the teams don't really want you to play high school as well. So you kind of have to make that decision. Do you want to go and play AAA and go and try and play D1? Or do you want to play more of a high school level for fun? But it's still very competitive and you can go places from there. It's a lot harder, obviously. So that's kind of the way that they run it there. It's different. And I guess it just makes you make a decision.
And now if we were looking from the outside, like what should we know about the high school team that you played for? I'm seeing you guys got like the Edmonton Oilers style jerseys. Looks like some packed barns here.
When I was there as a freshman, no one really truly knew what hockey was. We weren't very good. But then we got a really good freshman class, or I was a junior at the time. We got a new class at the time and we were pretty good. So we stood out to the school and started to get some people out to the games. But yeah, it's not as big as the SHL, which is your new Trier and a bunch of these top teams that I don't think that we would have been able to compete with back then. But now my high school is actually combined with another high school that's like a mile down the road. They're combined now, and now they play in a completely different division. So it's much different. I can't speak on that. But back then, we were just a team looking to have fun while also win and make friends.
Okay, so how do you go from that level of hockey to now playing ACHA M2, like a pretty competitive program, IU? Like, where did that connection come from? Did you want to go to a Big Ten school and then you found out IU had hockey? What did that process look like?
I played AAA for my 14 and 15 U years, and I decided that just really wasn't for me. And I'm going to take a step back. I'll play at a lower level and play for fun. So I played AA travel as well as high school, because you could do that when you played. You could do that with AA, just not AAA. So I double rostered and played on both teams. And my high school was still pretty competitive. It wasn't necessarily a step down. It was just a different level of commitment, I would say. Whereas my AA team, it was more commitment and like a club travel team, where our high school was just, we wouldn't go more than an hour really. So that's, I would say, the difference. I wanted to go to a big school. So I decided on a Big Ten, and I applied to a bunch of other schools in the Big Ten as well. And then I got accepted into our business school. And that's really why I came here. I came here as a student first. I knew that I wanted to try out and keep playing. But I definitely came to Indiana as a student first for their business school.
And it's crazy too, because you look at your freshman class coming in, and that seemed to be kind of when the tides turned for IU. Like you mentioned, you guys are getting a lot of recognition now. It wasn't like that when you first stepped foot on campus. Like, what are some memories from your freshman year? Did you have a welcome to the ACHA moment? You know, you made the team, and was it a practice at the Frank? Were you busing to somewhere else before the Frank was ready for you guys? What was your welcome to the ACHA moment?
Yeah, it's very different here in Bloomington because the rink doesn't open until October. So we actually did tryouts in Columbus, Indiana, which is an hour away and all back roads windy. You're driving in a forest at midnight on the way back. And as a freshman, it's, you don't know if this is right. Like if you're doing it right, or it's like, am I lost? But it's a pretty good, it's different. That's for sure. And I actually didn't even think I was going to make the team our freshman year. I just felt so out of shape. And, you know, be as a freshman looking at 22, 23 year old seniors who have been on the team for the past 3 years, that's pretty difficult to just come into. That was my experience. I drove to Columbus, Indiana for an hour for a whole month there and back twice a week.
Like literally welcome. Like, hey kid, this is how we're doing it here. You want to play hockey at Indiana? Get ready to drive to Columbus for a couple weeks before we really start going here. But once you get on the team, you guys had a great season your freshman year, won the TSCHL. You end up going to regionals. At the time, like looking back at it now, it seems like that is going to be the expectation for Indiana hockey moving forward. But at the time when you guys won that conference title your freshman year, could you tell by like the look on the seniors and juniors that that meant a lot?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually remember talking to one of the seniors earlier in the year when the regional rankings came out. I always love that. I'm like a nerd about the stats and the rule book for every tournament. But so I was intrigued. We were ranked out of a regional position for the first rank. I remember, and that's when I was talking to the senior, and he's like, "Yeah, we haven't really made regionals the past few years. Like we'd love to just get in there." And I was stunned by it, honestly. Like, but I didn't know how competitive it was until I started playing in those games. Once we started to really succeed that year, we didn't have much skill, but everyone just wanted to be there. We just worked extremely well as a team my freshman year. Once we won it, there the seniors were crying and the upperclassmen, like how incredible this is to end my career here at Indiana, especially after not even making a regional tournament prior.
We did some deep digging in the Hockey House archives to see when the first time we shared a picture with you in it was, because we'll get to it a bit, but we shared plenty. We found the team picture of you guys outside the Chili's after winning the TSCHL title your freshman year. Do you have any memories from that?
Yeah, that's a very good point. I completely forgot about that, but I guess we went there once during that year and it was just a running joke that I loved Chili's and it was a great time the first time. So we had to go back after we won. That was the running joke our freshman year for some reason. And honestly, I couldn't tell you why, but the food was good the first time and the service was really good. So I guess that's why.
It's a memory that'll last a lifetime for you guys. And then that sophomore season, was it the same group kind of returning? And it was now, hey, like we can win the T, we can go to regionals. Actually, let me rewind that question, because you guys end up going to nationals, right? You play your way through regionals. Talking with Coach Weiss after you guys won it this year, he was saying like, you guys really weren't there to play hockey in St. Louis. You know, you were doing all the sightseeing. You were just happy to be there. Do you have any memories from that? Like, did you guys kind of treat it like you were, you know, kids just going off to a national tournament? There was really no aspirations of winning.
You know, when we went there and like everyone was so stunned that we even made it, but it was always my dream once I found out that there was a national tournament was to play in the national tournament. So I didn't go on any of the sightseeing or anything. I stuck in the hotel with a few roommates of mine, but I went there to play hockey. And I think that everyone was just happy to be there because it's also over our spring break, the national tournament every year. So kids want to go there and they want to see stuff in St. Louis because, you know, you're already there, which I totally and completely understand. But I think that people as a team just went there and we were just happy to be there. And hockey was like, yeah, we got a game tomorrow, whatever. It doesn't really matter. I'm not worried about that right now. So the attitude has definitely changed over the past few years.
Yeah, because I imagine you go to you win regionals, you go to nationals, you win the T, all that stuff. That sophomore year, is that like everybody's coming back in the room, the locker room in Columbus, Indiana, and they must think like, hey, like we can go and do that again? Or was it like, was there a different vibe in the locker room?
My freshman year, I believe we had 3 or 4 seniors. Like we didn't have many at all. So we were a very young team. But actually, our sophomore year was a pretty different team. I believe we had 15 freshmen compared to my freshman year, we had 12 or something, because we had a few kids quit that they decided just wasn't for them. I think the attitude was, yeah, we're going to win the TSCHL and like we're going to go and we're going to compete in the national tournament. I always kept an optimistic outlook of, you know, let's go win the national tournament. But I think the more realistic goal was we're going to go and the goal this year is to compete in the national tournament and to get a bye in the regional tournament.
Yeah, and it showed, because you guys, you went and did the same exact thing, play your way through regionals again, and you show up at nationals, and I maybe think the Lindenwood guys thought you were going to do some sightseeing in Boston because you guys pulled a fast one on them in game one. And that was kind of like, I remember in Marlboro, it's crazy, right? There's like a million games going on at once, but it was like one game ended and then somebody was like, hey, have you seen the Indiana score? And we like walk over to rink 7 in the back and you guys are coming off the ice like you just won the Stanley Cup, and like the Lindenwood guys are doing the walk of shame back to their locker room. You mentioned you wanted to go and you knew you could go and compete, but did you guys ever think like, hey, we're going to, you know, knock off one of the top teams in the tournament to begin this thing?
Yeah, I would say I think that's where our underdog mentality from our freshman year came out. Last year, my sophomore year, we had incredible talent, Minnesota high school kids, AAA kids from all over. Like, we were a very, very talented team, but I didn't think we had the grit as my freshman year team and the want to go out there and win and play for each other. And getting a brutal draw in pool play with number 2 Lindenwood and number 3 Montana State, I think we just wanted to go in there with something to prove. Like, we had to go and play in a regional. I think our regular season wasn't as good as we expected or wanted. So going into a tough pool, we knew that if you win the first one, especially as the 4 seed, you have a very big advantage going in, as long as you play well in the second game. But if you win that second game, you have a good chance of just clinching. So that's what we went in that with that attitude. And Lindenwood, like, we never played a team that were as majority junior kids, and they're all twice our size. And we didn't really have that experience. But I think after the first period, we all talked about in the locker room, like, we can hang with these guys. And why not us? Like, why can't we win this game? And why can't we make it out of the pool? So, yeah, I think the underdog mentality came back.
You bring up an interesting point, and we've talked about this a lot in the recent weeks because it seemed like it happened in ACHA M2 this year. But do you think there is an advantage to the teams that battle their way through regionals being a little bit more fresh when they get to nationals versus those teams who get the auto bids to nationals? I feel like we saw a couple of those teams stumble in their first games because they hadn't played in so long. But you guys have battled your way through regionals, and it's kind of like a rite of passage at this point. Do you think there's a rest over rust argument there?
There's an argument from both sides, I think. I think it depends on your team. We weren't injured or anything going into the regional tournament. So I think, I mean, for us, we didn't have a great second semester of games this year. So going to the regional tournament actually really helped us and was probably the reason why we won it all in the end. But I think that the regional tournament, I think it's a good thing. You know, it's not a horrible thing. The only thing that isn't to your advantage is you play one game and you play one bad game and you're done. One bad bounce and you're out. Your season's over just like that. So I think that's the bad thing about going to regionals. But at the same time, you're playing competitive hockey against national tournament contending teams. So I think that it definitely gives you that experience. And no one's practicing as hard as a regional tournament elimination game. So that's definitely an advantage.
Yeah, I agree with it. And while we're on the topic of conversation here, like, walk us through this year's regional at Bird Arena, because that is what a barn to have the regional tournament at. Because I think you went from the previous 2 years, was it at St. James 1 year?
Our freshman year, it was in regionals. It was in, I can't even remember. It was in Columbus. It was in Columbus, Ohio. And okay. Then our sophomore year was in Virginia.
Yeah. So, I mean, I won't say nicer venues. I'll say newer venues. They were at newer arenas, and then you had to go to Bird for this one. Like, what was that like? I mean, locker room situation is a little tough. Ice sheet is pretty small, but did the boys battle the elements?
Yeah, well, we've played there before. We play Ohio regularly for our season, but when we first walked in, we were just praying that we didn't get that tiny locker room next to the door. And what do you know, our papers with the IU Trident sticking up there. So it was just a disadvantage right off the bat. But at the same time, the other teams have to go through it. So it's definitely interesting, but it's also nice, like, knowing where you're playing. Like, we've played there, and I like that experience as well, but the tight locker rooms are definitely a disadvantage. But then, yeah, I mean, we got the bye this year for the regional tournament and played UPenn, because UPenn just always seems to win games in the regional tournament every year, that you cannot doubt on that. Like, you can't count them out with their ranking. It doesn't really matter in the regional tournament, and they were up 3-0 on us in the second period, but we just needed to get one goal and get some momentum, and the tides just turned instantly.
Yeah, we had our eyes on that one because, like you said, they've pulled off a number of upsets in that regional tournament. They play in a really easy conference. They don't have a heavy non-out-of-conference schedule, so they're not really on anyone's radar. And I saw the score graphic at the end of the first period, and I was like, oh no, they might get the Hoosiers on this one. And then I saw the score graphic at the end of the second period, and I was like, oh boy, like, they woke up a beast.
we were down 3-0 and something had to change. Someone had to do something about it, and someone did. And I believe we ended up scoring 13 goals in the two periods. So it's pretty incredible what you can do when you actually, you know, like lock in and don't doubt a team.
We got to go back and talk about the year prior, because there's a pretty cool moment that kind of leads to you guys winning the national championship. But you play Iowa in the semifinal, 2-4 seeds going toe-to-toe on, I think it was rink 8 in Marlboro. We go to double overtime. Was that it? You mentioned teams that you'd played against before, Iowa being in the Midwest and being a Big Ten school. Had you guys played them prior to that matchup?
No, that was the first time we've played Iowa. There's a lot of Midwest teams that we haven't played, but Iowa we never played. No.
Yeah, and so you guys go to double overtime with them. Collins was staying up late clipping the highlights for this one, and you know, a bounce goes the other way, and the Hawkeyes end up going to the national championship game, and your dad of all people snaps this now iconic photo of you on the ice after the game. And we'll show people the photo of this, of course, when we're promoting the episode, but I just want to know, like, in that moment, what were your thoughts, right? Because, you know, you make it to the national semifinal game, you mentioned it yourself, you're a big Nationals guy, you know, big ACHA statistics rankings and all that stuff, so like, you know how hard it is to get to that moment. This photo that your dad takes, like, in that moment, what were you thinking after the game ended?
I don't know. It just hurt. I was like, oh, all year we worked so hard for this, and we come out of a beast of a pool, and we play Iowa, and you know, their goalie stands on his head, and I played against him in high school, and I knew he was good going into it. I never knew he was that good. I believe we had 70-something shots, and we just gave it everything we had. He stood on his head, and credit to him, he deserved that win, and the whole team deserved the win, not just him, but it stung, and especially because the puck, they scored right in front of me. It bounced off the back of the net, and I didn't want to kick it into the middle for some reason, so I lifted my leg. I remember it clearly, and it goes right under my foot that I lifted and right to the guy, snipes a top shelf, and I happened to be right there, so I think that really hurt me. Just I blamed it on myself a lot, like going back. I just kept rewatching the video in the locker room, and emotional for so long, but yeah
it's a stinger. And you go into the off season, you regroup there, but is in that locker room, you mentioned too, like, you guys had a really young freshman class last year, so I imagine, you know, as sad as you are to see your seniors go and the upperclassmen go, I'm sure there were guys who were juiced, you know, especially to see how close you guys came to winning it all.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, I was still down, I was still balling in the locker room, just hurt from everything, blaming myself, just reflecting on the game and that moment. Especially leaders came up to me and said, like, look, we can do this, like, look where we came from, and, you know, supported me and said, we beat the number 2 and 3 team back-to-back days, and we take the national runner-up to double overtime with a minute left, you know. So I think that gave us a lot of hope, like, we can do this, and it doesn't really matter what seed you are, what rank you are. So that's something too that they really did a good job of, that I didn't really focus on at the time.
Looking to repeat your success from years prior, right? You win the T, you go through regionals, get to nationals. Very next year, same thing, go a couple steps further in nationals. Ultimately, you'd think, hey, we got to win the T to get to regionals, to get to nationals. And then a little hiccup in the road, looking back at it, you guys get upset by Michigan in the T playoffs. Like, what is the mood in the room after that? You know, you mentioned you had a tough second semester.
For some reason, we just came back slow. I think we came back and instantly played Miami, who's another really wagon of a team, and got swept by them. So I think it was just a tough start to the semester, and we never really caught our momentum back from the first semester where we went 19-2 or something like that. And then, yeah, we go into the T expecting to win. And I think that was the biggest thing, is we underestimated Michigan because we swept them earlier in the year. And they're a really solid team. They should have made the regional tournament. Yeah, we just got upset, and going in the locker room, I think the attitude was, they're a good team, I guess. Like, we, you know, we just didn't play that well. And the biggest thing was, do we even want this? Like, as a person like me, like, I know there were a lot of kids that were just, there were some kids who didn't really care. And I think it was like, we need to make a decision if we want to make a run at this or not. And if we do, then let's lock in here. And I think that loss was ultimately another reason why we won the national championship, just thinking back at that.
You crawl your way through regionals, like you mentioned, you get the bye. And then, you know, all of a sudden it's you guys in Miami out of the Southeast region. And, you know, who knew what was down the road for you guys? But did that, Were there any surprises there that they ended up winning the T, they end up going out of regionals? Was it just like, you know, they've kind of been a solid team all year long? So it sounds like you guys probably weren't surprised to run into them in St. Louis.
Yeah, no, they're a really good team. I think this is the best Miami team that I've played the past 3 years, for sure. Just depth and scoring, and their top guys are unbelievable. I was not surprised at all that they made it out of the regional tournament. And us and them were going back and forth for that 3 and 4 seed. Like, I think the Southeast was very, very slim in the stats for the bye. So I think any team out of the Southeast would have gone, and I wouldn't really have been surprised.
And so you guys get to Nationals, you get a win against Weber State, you drop one to Northeastern. The way pool play works, you know, if you can go 3-0, you get a spot in. If you go 2-1, you're going to need some help. You guys go into a game against 2-0 Michigan State, of all teams, and all they have to do is beat you guys and they can move on. And they have a lead at one point, and then you guys get one, you get another, you tie it up, you get there. I believe you had a major penalty that led to a power play for you guys, and the floodgates just opened on Michigan State. I mean, that had to feel good for you guys. You know, you're doing everything you can. You knew that you're going to need some help later on in the day. After you beat Michigan State, like, what does that afternoon look like waiting for the Weber State Northeastern game?
It was very stressful, that's for sure. I just wanted it to be time, you know, just trying to kill time. My parents were there, so I went, ate with them, and I'm just itching at the table. And they could tell I was nervous, you know, a team with nothing to play for against the team that has everything to play for is definitely scary when you need the team that has nothing to win it for you guys, and stressful and nerve-wracking. I commented on their Instagram, giving them some extra hype to get them going. But no, it was very stressful and nerve-wracking. That's all I can describe.
Because it's got to be a weird feeling after the game, right? You're like, is this the last time I'm taking my gear off this year? Like, I can't even imagine being a senior. And like, you know, you win a game and it's like, well, that might have been my last like hockey game, right? Like, was anyone talking about the possibility of that?
I would say silently. Yeah, I think everyone was very happy and trying to enjoy the win. We mathematically eliminated Michigan State. Like, we just had an incredible third period that sparked a different energy that I haven't seen all year in us as a team. So that was amazing. But I think deep down, everyone's like, guys, like, we're not in. We still have to have Weber State pull out an upset. People were talking about it, but down low and to the kids next to them, not out loud.
After the fact, I saw the video of you guys celebrating. But was there a designated watch party, or were there a couple of you guys that made your way to the rink? Because being at the Weber State game, I remember seeing a decent amount of Hoosier apparel, but I didn't know if that was you guys or if that was maybe some family and friends that were tuning in.
Everyone decided we were going to go in the conference room of our hotel and watch it as a team. But I think some kids got ahead of themselves and just wanted to go see it in person. I personally couldn't do that. I don't know. It just seems too stressful. And watching the game in the conference room, my stomach was upset the whole game. But no, it was a conference room. And then there were a few, not that many, but there were a lot of fans and parents that were at that game in person.
It is a hockey memory that I will never forget. So watching that game in person, there was like something that clicked in my head when Weber State killed the 5-on-3 for 2 minutes and they were blocking shots left and right. That was when I was like, wait, they might have a chance at winning this thing because they are not going down easy. Did that get the boys fired up in the conference room back at the hotel when that was going on?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everyone was just cheering for everyone. Everyone's looking up everyone's like their Instagrams, and like they're not looking at their phones, but just manifesting it. There were some incredible blocks. And after the 5-on-3, the energy was so down in the conference room, but those blocks and saves, it was amazing. The energy was incredible.
Once that puck goes in the net in overtime, Weber State, they force overtime. They beat Northeastern. That puts you guys into it. What is the vibe like in the hotel? Like, I'm sure it's a celebration, but then is somebody giving a speech like, hey, like, we got to take advantage of this opportunity. Like, we've been given a second chance here.
Yeah, I think we're all stunned. First off, that like Northeastern didn't pull their goalie. Like, they scored with the goal. Weber State scored with the goalie in the net, actually. We celebrated for about 10 minutes screaming and hotel lobbies looking at us when we're all walking out. But yeah, our coach Andrew Weiss said, like, we're in the final four, we had our fun, like, time to go to bed. And everyone did that. Everyone's just so excited. We all went to bed and looking forward to Lindenwood the next day.
We mentioned Coach Weiss a couple times now. Like, what kind of coach is he on the bench? I know he's an IU grad. He played ACHA hockey at Indiana. He understands how the ACHA works. Like, what kind of coach is he, and does he offer a valuable perspective as somebody who went to IU?
He brings a lot of like alumni perspectives. I believe it was Lindenwood, or maybe it was Miami. I can't remember. He had an alumni actually come into the locker room and talk to us. And he always likes to bring different perspectives and always talks about, oh, in a few years, you're going to be, you know, drinking at a bar with these guys next to you, or at each other's weddings, and how exciting it is to play. And you don't realize that you're in this amazing moment. So he brings a really good perspective, and he pushes us really hard in practice. So that's all you can ask for in a coach.
And so now you're getting prepared for the biggest game of the season. You're playing Lindenwood, a team that you guys pretty much bumped from nationals the year prior to. How much of a concern is the tornado watch?
Yeah, no one really knew about it. And my parents are texting me, do you know that there's a tornado watch going on? Like, the rinks are clearing and, you know, our speakers blasting. Like, no one's paying attention. Our coaches haven't come in and said anything. I'm thinking, oh, do I say anything to these guys? So I say something to the guy next to me and he gets mad and everyone's like, what's wrong? And then it just spreads the locker room, and I kind of started it. Everyone had to find out eventually, I guess. That's the way I look at it. And then people start flooding out of the locker room, and it's a distraction, that's for sure. You know, when you have a ritual, or not a ritual, you do everything exactly the way it is for the whole year, and you time everything perfectly. You know, you get a 30-minute delay while you're in full gear. It's pretty tough. But Lindenwood had the same thing. So, you know, they had the same thing to deal with.
Except Lindenwood was on the other side of the ice. They didn't have 200 people in the hallway outside their locker room like you guys did. Were you expecting to see that? Did you come outside and see it for yourself at all?
Yeah, I did. My parents said that everyone was just leaving the rink, and that the people from the game prior was in the hallway. But I come out and there's nowhere to move. There's a dog running around. Like, it was absolute chaos. But and like, everyone's wondering what's going on. When's the delay going to get pushed back? But I had to go out there because it was so hot in the locker room. But I went out there and it didn't change much because of how many people were sitting on the floor or standing around, and you couldn't really move. But it was weird to see, that's for sure.
Yeah. And you know, once it was all said and done, I was honestly impressed with how fast they got you guys on the ice. It seemed like they weren't going to keep that delay going any longer. As soon as they got the all clear, I felt like they turned on the warm-up music and you guys were taking the ice.
Yeah, it was like 10, 15 minutes, time to get our helmets on and talk with our coaches, and then you're going. I wanted to get right into it instead of sitting there any longer and sweating in my gear.
And so you guys get a big win over Lindenwood. You basically beat the home team in their own barn. Like, what is it like? Because I think Indiana is such a big brand. You know, when people find out, hey, the Indiana hockey team's going to the national championship, could you guys feel that support? There had to have been a bunch of people reaching out on social media and, you know, wishing you guys best of luck in that final game.
Everyone that had played for Indiana and everyone that has been supporting us, commenting on the Instagram, texting us, the players, the coaches. And it was incredible to see how many people were behind us. And we knew that people were watching us. And, you know, in Chicago as an alumni, they told us that last year. But to see it actually like unravel with everyone contacting you, yeah, it was an incredible feeling, and definitely really helped us, I think, actually realizing how many people we had behind us.
And you guys have the advantage of playing first, so you clinch your spot. Not to be outdone, your rivals in the T, the Miami Redhawks, they defeat Florida Gulf Coast. We get two upsets on the day, and it's going to be an all TSCHL final, and you guys meet again there. And do your eyes light up when you see a team that maybe got your number in the second semester and maybe a chance for redemption in the national championship game?
Definitely, that's for sure. But the way that their goalie was playing, I did not like that. He was unbelievable in the Florida Gulf Coast game as we were watching the first period, and then we left to go get food. But I mean, the goalie is unbelievable, but their top six is also insane. Like, but it definitely made me feel better going into a national championship game, playing a team that we've already seen before and who we owe it to after them sweeping us in the first semester. So it was definitely a good thing, but also a bad thing when their goalie's that hot.
And it was a wonderful game, back and forth action. You guys have the lead. It's late in the game. I start making my way behind the IU net. I'm like, here's the championship shot. We're getting ready for it. And then bing, bang, boom, they tie it up with the goalie pulled. I kid you not, I turn around and I see three IU scratches in full gear standing behind me behind the net. And I'm like, oh no, you talk about a momentum killer. They have all the momentum going into overtime. what was that room like as you guys came off the ice getting ready for overtime?
Yeah, being a part of the Iowa game and being on the ice for the Iowa game, it was heartbreaking. I started to tear up, to be completely honest, and I just kept thinking about Iowa. And I was on the ice again for them scoring with a minute left, and I just can't believe my eyes what just happened. And Will Jarami blocks a shot, and then our goalie makes a paddle save in the same sequence, and it's like, it's insane because that shot should have gone in and we should have lost our season in the last minute and blow the game. But in the locker room, I think the vibes were up and down. Some kids were up. I was down for a good amount of time. And then I just remembered we scored on Iowa with a minute left in the third period to go to overtime. It's going to be the same exact thing. Like, let just, that was the attitude that I thought of. And, you know, why can't it be us? They have a hot goalie. We're going to have to figure out another way to beat them, just like Iowa. Like, we're going to have to figure this out, but it's definitely possible. And we've been training all year for this.
You mentioned your goalie making a huge save in the third period, not the goalie that you guys started the season with. You know, talk about this stud who stepped up for you guys in the postseason.
Yeah, about a week or two before, our starting goalie at the time decided that he wanted to go on spring break and have a good time at spring break. Our backup goalie, who was the starter in the national tournament, it was a good confidence boost to see how many people he had behind him, and everyone was hyping him up and like constantly supporting him throughout all of the time that he was the starter after our starter had quit. He came in and played out of his mind. I think he had 4 or 5 games played all year. And so to do that in the national tournament is insane.
Yeah, and that was McCaskey, right?
Yeah, Brendan McCaskey stood on his head all week.
Yeah, just an unbelievable story too, and getting the job done, and you know, next man up mentality. And so, you know, he, like you said, he made a really big save at the end of regulation to send the game into overtime. You guys are all of a sudden on your heels now. Fast forward to overtime. You know, you have the puck in the zone. Puck comes out to the point. You're on the power play, right? It was a power play.
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That puck comes back to you at the point, and I just have to know. Was there anything in your brain telling you not to tee that thing up, or did you right away know I'm going rock star mode from here?
Well, in the third period, towards the end of the game, we had a power play, and for some reason, I shot about 6 pucks into shin pads, so I was pretty frustrated about that and down about that, but it came out to me, and there was so much traffic in front of the net. Like, everyone was in front of the net besides, I think, one person. When everyone was in front, I just wanted to get it on net as fast as possible. I think a wrist shot just would have been an awkward angle because it came out on my backhand. So I just took it and I did a slap shot. And I'll take many slap shots, probably one of my first of the whole year, but I just ripped it on net as fast as I could. And I saw the net move, and that was the end of it.
It was insane. As soon as I saw your stick wind up, I was like, oh wow. You know, hits the back of the net and the celebration is on. Looking back at it, you know, we talked to some of your high school friends here. Was that the biggest overtime goal you've ever scored? Because it sounds like you had a pretty big one in high school.
That has to be my biggest one for the national tournament in overtime. But yeah, in high school, I had another, and we were a conference championship. I scored in overtime, but that was also incredible. But this one, I don't think I could top it.
And now in that moment when the puck finds the back of the net, I know when you're a kid in the driveway and you score the overtime winner, right, you plan your celebration. Was there any thought going through your mind, or were you just trying to get your helmet off as fast as possible?
Yeah, I just flew my gloves off as fast as possible. My helmet got stuck. I'm just sprinting all over wherever and just straight back to McCaskey, and I jump into his arms and I finally get my helmet off. But no, the celebration, it would have been cool to do something cool, but I just started flailing my arms and legs and I jumping all over the place. I didn't know what to do with myself. I had so many emotions going through my mind and my body at the same time.
It's unbelievable. And you mentioned the celebration too, but what has been your favorite part of the celebration? Is there a specific place you guys went? Is there a place you guys brought the trophy that you're going to look back and remember? I know we saw it in the Arby's drive-thru later that night. Is there a moment with the cup that stands out to you, you know, over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, the Arby's, that was the only thing open after the game, after all the celebration. But yeah, that was my 21st that night as well. So we took it to a bar the next morning. So that was really cool, just having it there. And they took pictures with us in it. And we got them a jersey signed that's going to be framed there, which is really cool. Yeah, but that was definitely pretty memorable, being at my 21st and being able to take it now and be a part of it you know, going to the bars.
Yeah, an unbelievable story too. And we could talk, and we didn't even really dive too much in depth into it, but we got to talk about the TSCHL. A lot of really good teams in that conference. It seems like you guys went toe-to-toe with Kentucky a couple times throughout the year, Miami. Is there a favorite place to play in the T?
It's a very good question. I like the ice at Miami the best, that's for sure. Though you can't really beat that. But also, I love playing in front of the Kentucky fans. So it's not too fun when you're losing or when you mess up. It is a blast when you get it, when you win in front of them, and we split there. So, and next year we'll go there. So hopefully we can sweep and make them be quiet. But
there we go. And then last question, according to LinkedIn, you are the treasurer of the IU hockey team. Is that still true?
Well, yes. I don't know. We just did elections and now I'm the vice president. But yeah, the past year I was the treasurer.
Okay, if somebody donated $100,000 overnight to the Indiana hockey team, what would your first purchase be?
That's a good question. I think I would just lower dues, honestly. I think as a completely self-funded organization, we have to pay for everything, or parents do, and we would have to pay little to nothing. So that'd be pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's how you know you're talking to a treasurer right there. Any of us marketing guys would say, oh, we're getting new jerseys.
I'm thinking new jerseys, maybe a locker room, nice new set of gloves. He's just going to lower the dues for everybody. You got to love that.
Yeah, we don't come from a lot of money for our program, and nothing is, you know, nice and ideal with this team. So we've been dealing with the past 3 years. Why can't we keep going and make everyone pay a little bit less?
Yeah. And like you mentioned too, it seems like winning a national championship, nothing is better. You're not going to get the school's attention any more than winning a national championship. So I'm sure, you know, it's going to be easier for the guys to come over the next couple of years.
Absolutely. Yeah. We haven't gotten it. Like, what else do we have to do? And they're finally giving us the recognition, and it's just awesome. Like, we deserved it. And seeing the amount of recruits that are like interested now, all of a sudden they're popping out of nowhere. It's pretty cool too.
Yeah. You just got to make sure that they know how to ride a bike when they're filling out the recruiting thing. Right?
Exactly. That is very important.
All right. I think that's a good place to end it. Ethan, enjoy the week. It sounds like it'll be a beautiful one in Bloomington, and of course, a lot of fun. And every weekend is fun when you get to walk around with the ACHA National Championship Trophy.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you so much for having me out. It was a good time.
Once again, thank you to D-Lo for joining the show. Great insights on Indiana's journey to the national championship. Collins, you mentioned like the redemption arc there is insane. The photo speaks for itself there. They went through regionals every year. They won the T. They go to nationals, and they chipping away, and they finally break through in St. Louis.
It's a really, really cool story to hear. I won't say it was his fault. He said it was his fault that they lost that game against Iowa and Marlboro. But it's just such a cool turnaround from having that to then having the game, not just game winning, national championship winning goal come off your stick. So, you know, what goes around comes around.
And on top of that, too, like, Indiana doesn't have any, you know, anything fancy, anything flashy. And when I said to him, you know, if you got offered $100,000 tomorrow, what would you spend it on for IU hockey? And he just goes, lowering the dues for everyone. Like, of course, just a team guy all around, just wants what's best for the boys. And I'm sure he's going to have a very exciting senior season.
Yeah, he was definitely one of the coolest guests I think we've had on. I think he was one of the first guests in a while that I could relate to in the you know, hearing what their program is like coming from the mid to low end of ACHA D1, where, you know, we don't have everything going our way and we don't have all the money in the world. So it was definitely cool to hear that experience.
All right. Should we get to some thank yous here, boys? I know Herm wasn't here, and there's so many people we can thank every year, and that maybe we'll just bounce back and forth. Maybe Collins, you can go and we'll alternate here and just go take over our thank yous here. I'll toss over you, Collins. You can go first, and we'll just kind of, no rhyme or reason, no order, but we'll just rattle them off, because I think there's so many people that we got to meet, interact with, some familiar faces, some new faces that honestly just made the weeks so much more enjoyable when we're doing this. We love going on the road and meeting everyone. So it was beyond a great time in Philly and St. Louis, and it was a major part to the people that we got to interact with along the way.
I don't know how we should do this. And, you know, I'll just list, you know, one or two people off here, and then we'll just keep going around the horn, I guess.
We could do it like snake draft. Collins, you go first with the thank you, and then no one can repeat the thank yous.
Well, I'll start out with a close friend of mine. She's just been absolutely wonderful. You know, everything over the years with Villanova hockey, and then also at nationals and helping me with my job search as well. Sarah Barsap, amazing person. It was really great getting to catch up with her.
All right. I'm going to go Will Bramlett because he is one of the kindest, sweetest people that I know. Beyond talented photographer who let me use incredibly, incredibly expensive gear for free, had a couple of shots of the tournament easily, and is destined for really, really big things with a pro team sooner rather than later in a full-time capacity.
Yeah, definitely. And he gave us a ride home from the rink one night too. So that's got to get some bonus points there. My first pick, I'm going with the crew at College Hockey South, Commissioner Kyle Nell and Director of Communications Olivia Shapiro. They did a phenomenal job. Collins and I were looking it over when we were in St. Louis, but they live tweeted every single goal from a College Hockey South team at AAU Nationals. And they had over 15 teams there across three divisions. Not only were they great to us when we were down there in Philly, we got to have a couple meals with them at the Goal Line Pub. They made it so easy for us to continue to cover the AAU tournament once we shifted to St. Louis. It would not have been possible without them sending us photos, sending us updates, letting us know, keeping us posted on what was going on in Philly. And I am forever grateful for the work that they put in while we were in St. Louis. And again, getting to interact with them. They're great people. Got to hang out with them a ton down in Savannah. So we've given them shout outs before, but they were a pleasure to work with during the national tournaments.
Keeping with the AAU theme, not necessarily somebody who works for AAU, but David Wagstaff. I've known him for the past couple of years. He's been, you know, 20 minutes down the road from me at Drexel. And not only as just another, I guess, photography resource, but also a friend. You know, some of the work he's doing with Drexel and some of the projects that he's been working on there, as well as with, you know, some teams like the Hartford Wolfpack, is awesome. So it was really great getting to see him again. He's just an all world guy. He texted me like 2 weeks after the national championship in St. Louis and was like, "Hey, I got Flyers tickets. You want to come?" You know, unfortunately, I had other things in the way. He's just a very thoughtful person, and you know, is always around to lend a hand, even if that meant, you know, skipping class or whatever to come shoot AAU college hockey with us.
I'm going to go with Margaret Dixon. She is absolutely our rock when it comes to everything women's hockey in and around the ACHA. Really did a great job stepping up game presentation for those women's games on the main stage at Centene. Honestly, it felt like a different experience just with some of the music choices. Cannot thank her enough for all of the work that she does for the pod during the regular season, during nationals. She is a wonderful, wonderful friend to all of us.
Yeah, and like I mentioned with the crew at CHS, when we weren't able to cover the women's games, Margaret was right there keeping us posted too, which was great to have. And I kind of want to do a full umbrella sweep. The staff at AAU was phenomenal. Scott Solomon, Mark Pirowitz, John LaRochester, Sarge, Casey, the whole crew. I mean, that was, Collins, the fact that you and I had nameplates on our desks in Philly was awesome. It was such a nice touch. I loved that setup that they had where you could just walk right into the war room and it had like the U-shaped table with everybody important and what their role was. So if anybody came in with a question, they would ask it to that specific person. And of course, Collins and I got a lot of questions and we were like, "Hey, we're not AAU. We're just here having a good time." So it was a great tournament as always with them, and they welcomed us in with open arms. And, you know, the same can be said for ACHA. Craig Barnett and Paul Hebert did a phenomenal job once again, getting us hooked up and getting us some merch, whatever we needed. I mean, Collins and I came flying in at 10 p.m. St. Louis time and they had our media passes waiting right there for us at the door. So a great event. You know, both AAU and ACHA knocked it out of the park once again this year. And we can't thank them enough for welcoming us in, treating us with the most respect while we were there as well. But Collins, I'll throw it back over to you. Why don't you go rapid fire with the rest of your list here?
Yeah, I mean, you covered the good majority of it, both of you. So I just got two left. Rombo, always good getting to talk to him. Such a character. I chatted with him for like 30 minutes hearing all the stuff he's been up to recently. So get to hear from him. And then Dom Stankiewicz, another just incredibly talented photographer and a really great guy. So yeah, great getting to catch up with both of those guys.
I got Peyton Turnage, just stellar commentator, huge supporter of the podcast. Felt like every single game he was on the mic for, we were getting some sort of stick tap basically in some form or another. Kate Scheiber, social media extraordinaire for Ohio Hockey. So proud of what she has done to build that brand and really carry on a legacy. Chip DiLorenzo, who I express sincere congratulations. I finally got the chance to see him in person after last year's Nationals, after he won the emotion category, and to see him on the ice sharing that moment with Ethan was really, really touching. Ty LaFollette for schlepping what was 6-7 hours down from Michigan on a whim, basically, to be there for the men's and I believe women's national championships as well. The Sioux coaching staff for being great sports and always playing along and welcoming me onto the bench with open arms. And then to Indiana for not jumping me when I went into the locker room, because I know things were a little bit testy at a certain point over there.
I mean, death, taxes, and Herm getting testy with teams at the ACHA national tournament for his picks. So you got to love it there, and nothing but respect for the Hoosiers and the run that they went on. You mentioned Peyton Turnage. I do want to touch on it because I think there were a lot of frustrations with flow hockey during the tournament. And I just want to go out there and say that none of it falls on the shoulders on the wonderful people who are doing the broadcasting for them. Devin Sarah and Reagan from Central Michigan and as well as Lou, they did a phenomenal job all weekend long. I had the opportunity to call a second period game with Reagan after Devin's voice went missing. And I had an awesome time doing that as well. But even just like interacting with those guys at breakfast every morning and getting to shoot the shit with them, and it was awesome. And the connections we've made there are going to be, you know, friendships for life. And I've already gone back and forth with Peyton in the DMs a million times already with his thoughts on the podcast. So I'm sure he's grinning ear to ear listening to this as we talk about him and give him a shout out. So that was one that I had. And the last one that we hadn't covered was our friend Keegan from Maryville, who was a volunteer for the ACHA. He was doing great things. A student at Maryville, he plays on their D2 team. It was one of his like sports management classes or whatever. They said they needed people to work the tournament, and hockey nerd like him was going to be there. And he was great to hang out with. And honestly, he fit right in with us. We should have had some Hockey House apparel for him because, you know, he was wearing like the retro style snapbacks like Collins and I, and, you know, had the flow going out the back, and he was wearing the Jog ACHA sweatshirt. And we like to be at every rink, and he was all over the place too. I think his main role was getting the banners on the benches with the team logos and making sure pucks were ready, and he was flying all over the place. And so, you know, we got to spend a lot of time with him, got to eat a lot of meals with him as well, and he was great to be around too. But it's so crazy. Every year we do this and we just get to meet so many amazing people. And now, you know, when we go back next year, we're going to know all these people. So that makes it even better too. So had a lot of fun there. I think another one too is the crew at Cock Hockey. Ben Smith and Liam Gormley were doing behind the scenes work for their socials during the national tournament as well. So we love going back and forth with those guys too. But any last minute additions to this list? But I think I just hope everyone listening, and I know a lot of these people that we're thanking are weekly listeners, and I hope they know how much we appreciate the work they do and the help that they provided us during the national tournament season.
The Pitt social girl for covering while we weren't there.
Jess Lott.
She covered the Oswego game for us.
And she fueled the beef with Herm on Twitter, which the people loved.
That is true.
Which we've squashed, for the record.
We have squashed the beef. So the beef has been settled. Herm, what do you got for a question this week as we start to wrap this up?
Keeping it lighthearted with all this talk about nationals and championships, I want to know, what's the GOAT chip?
When you say GOAT chip, like, what was the GOAT chip of this tournament season, of all time?
Oh, no, I'm talking about literal chips.
Oh, the GOAT chip?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. All right. I was thinking, like, Indiana. I was like, we just talked about it for 45 minutes. Ethan DiLorenzo. Like, there's no chip better than that one. Man, the GOAT chip. What a question. Because I think context matters, too. Like, there's nothing better than when you're waiting for food at a Mexican restaurant. Those tortilla chips, they are amazing because you're starving and the salsa's right there. Like, that's got to be up pretty far up there. And then I'm thinking, like, you know, if I'm at Jersey Mike's or Subway, like, I'm probably going with the cheddar sun chips. But I'm like, yeah, that's not a GOAT chip. You know, that's a solid chip, but I don't know if it's the GOAT. Herm, you got one in mind?
This came up just because I had this conversation literally a couple of hours ago with my coworker and good buddy, Nick Spina. Our former vice president of game presentation, Gina Nassavera, got us all, as an office, like, a whole bunch of snacks. Like, she sent them from Arkansas, and in that bag of snacks was a large bag of Cape Cod chips. And I stated my case for why Cape Cod regular chips are the best chip of all time.
Am I a loser for agreeing with you? I think the Cape Cod chip is so versatile. I was applauding the tortilla chip for what it can do, but I think, you know, the Cape Cod chip is so good.
I don't know. I might have to disagree with you guys here. I mean, the Cape Cod chip and the tortilla chip are great. I love both of them. The Cape Cod chip too. Oh, it just reminds me of summers at my parents' place in New Jersey or sitting on the beach in Nantucket, tossing those in a sandwich. Oh my God. I might have to go to veer off a little bit and make haste. I don't know. I'm like split though. We could either go with the nacho cheese Dorito. I think that is another very versatile chip. It's a staple. It's an icon. It is the chip. You know, it takes the tortilla chip and elevates it. But if you want to talk about a tortilla chip elevated even more, what is the official name of it? The spicy sweet chili Dorito. I think the issue with the spicy sweet chili Dorito is they do get a little spicy after you've had, you know, a couple. And so you just got to keep eating them in order to just keep the sweetness so you don't, you know, set your mouth on fire. I don't know, but I think the nacho cheese Dorito is up there, you know, the goat of goats. Put it in the Hall of Fame. You know, it's not the Cape Cod chip, which obviously I think belongs in the builder category. The Cape Cod chip is Jordan, and the nacho cheese Dorito is LeBron.
I think a better analogy is the Cape Cod chip is Wayne Gretzky. The nacho cheese Dorito is Austin Matthews. High-flying, goal scorer, flashy, new age, will never sniff the original. I was thinking about the nacho cheese Dorito being more like a Danny Heatley, because I think the nacho cheese Dorito would have had 50 goals in 07. The nacho cheese Dorito definitely had 50 goals in 07. The kids in the vending machines in 07 were pretty good selection of chips there. Herm, that's a great question. What, did we miss anything else? Oh, we got to give a shout out to our guy Sully. He was an e-bug the other night in the AHL in Bridgeport and was on the bench for them. And then we also have to give a shout out because we had an NHL e-bug with ties to AAU college hockey. Former New Haven goalie Alex Fernandez was the e-bug for the Penguins at MSG a couple weeks ago. So stick taps for those boys for representing the club hockey world. But again, we'll get into the offseason awards next episode. We'll take a deep dive. Plenty of players of the year, coaches of the year, nominees and awards that are being handed out as we speak now. So we'll cover those next week. But again, we want to get Herm on. We want to give our thank yous because it is the people that we interact with at these tournaments and give us the support online that make this whole operation go. So thank you so much for tuning in. As always, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, if you want to send us some stuff, we're looking for some off-season content. As always, you can find us at Hockey House Pod on all platforms. And if you want to send us an email too, we're on email thehockeyhousepod@gmail.com. But like I said, the DMs are always open and we will keep the content coming. We got some more post-nationals interviews lined up in the next coming weeks, and we look forward to bringing you those as the off season rolls on. We'll see you next week.
See you, boys.